up the movies. You like, what's that movie you like so much? About spaghetti, meatballs or something? Go see that.
Podcast where we watch movies that didn't get good reviews.
My name is Mark.
And I'm Taylor.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for checking out what I believe to be our second episode. We watched a more recent movie this time around, Gotti from 2018.
Yes, the infamous Gotti, starring John Travolta. And, well, how do we even start about?
There's a lot. We did what we set out to do with this podcast today, as far as check out movies that don't have the best reviews.
Yeah.
You know.
Gotti is one of 43 films to have a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes. 0%.
Which we talk and we'll talk about, you know, you can't live or die by what critics say. That's a little bit of what we're into here, but it's noteworthy when it's the zero, you know. But noteworthy in the sense of, like, I think we're more likely to watch that than if it had maybe an 8%. The zero is like, what's going on here?
It's a little intriguing.
Isn't it?
And I think the most succinct way I can put it is, it's like this movie was written by Christopher Moltisanti. And when you learn that, in fact, it was directed by Kevin Connolly, who played E on Entourage.
I didn't connect that really, and it's so obvious.
So very. And that brings me to I pulled two reviews from critics that I thought were funny. Jason Bailey of FlavorWire says, "A comically terrible imitation of a biopic directed by Kevin Connolly, with all the flair and nuance of a movie within a movie on Entourage."
Okay. Oh, so not even the movie within a movie of The Sopranos. That's almost like you giving it more credit, I think, than
yeah, you're right.
Say. This feels like a movie within a movie on Entourage.
Yeah.
Youch.
Another one I pulled is from Stephen Witte of the New York Daily News, who says, "Admittedly, Travolta, who produced, is sure having fun."
Oh, yeah.
"What ham wouldn't? Chewing on the scenery like it was a meatball hero. He swaggers around in shiny suits and silver wigs, barking orders."
Yeah, yeah.
That's a pretty succinct review.
Yeah, and I think with that, you know, this isn't me reaching to try to find something to defend, but I will say, if that's your kind of thing, like, it's kind of fun to watch John Travolta be a ham, I guess we'll say it, right? Chewing up the scenery, as they say.
We had legitimate laughs during our viewing of it, just because the choices he makes are so odd and remarkable.
There's a lot to get to, of course, but it is also a very jarring, hodgepodgey movie. So if this episode does that, it's by design. I just want everyone to know that. But when you said that, to get back about what you said about, as if Christopher Moltisanti, the character from The Sopranos, just in case I get everyone on the same page here. When you said that, not too far into the movie, you know, when it was really dawning, 15, 20 minutes in, where it was like, what's really going on here? You said that, and it was just like a, you know, I don't know, what, like a decoder ring or just something that, like, you know, when you see like the secret, like, oh, okay, I see it now. It was like the glasses that helped the movie make sense to me. So it's like, okay, yeah. It does feel very, we were talking about it before, a lot of heavy, kind of cliched people just speaking in these like metaphors and cliched phrases and just, oh, I don't know where to begin.
The writing is, it really just feels like it, a fake movie, maybe, like somebody doing an impression of what they think a movie about a real life mobster would be.
Yeah, yeah. Another thing is, it feels a little bit to me like maybe you taped a movie off TV and missed some spots or something. Like, you were like, in the old days, you might tape a movie on your VCR off TV and hit pause when there were like commercials. And sometimes you go, oh shit, I forgot to hit on pause. Or so, you know, like, and then maybe you're like missing a scene or two along the way. Sometimes it felt like that. Like, it felt like I get movies have subplots and other things, several things going on, but it felt like whiplash sometimes.
It was very jarring. No linear structure, really. No, like, arbitrary scenes, things that didn't really need to be included are featured.
Yeah.
Also, so the movie, like the basic framing of it is like John Gotti reflecting on a life of crime as he's in jail, dying of cancer, and his son is considering taking a plea bargain.
That's right. His son is also John and also having some troubles of his own. And yeah, facing the plea bargain and wherein you admit there is a mob and it's a big, you know, it's a all everything that comes with that, I think. And yeah.
So we're bouncing between the past and the present, and we see John Travolta in the present, the oldest version of John Gotti. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He's got bald cap and all the makeup, but the actor playing his son,
yeah,
they don't seem to change anything about him throughout the various points in time.
Yeah, yeah, it's like a lot of crime movies where it spans seeming like the 70s and 80s and maybe up until some later day time, and it's really well reflected. John Travolta, the makeup, like you said, wardrobe, whatever. Travolta, and I feel like some others, they go through the process of the kid that plays his son. He looks the same, whether he's, you know, in school, he's getting sent off to school, or he's like getting married. It just, yeah, it's like, it's really baffling.
No exaggeration. They don't do a thing to him. Mm-hmm. Maybe they give him a pair of glasses.
Yeah, like, you know, it's not even a drastically different hairstyle or anything. You even mentioned, like, gray him up a little bit or something. I don't know. You know, like a, well, yeah, it's really, it was kind of comical in a way of just, he's like sitting, because again, we see him, it bounces around between times. So we see him, you know, at the end of this whole, what we know to be the end of this story and the flashbacks, and it kind of looks the same. It's kind of jarring.
20 years have supposedly passed, yet he looks exactly the same.
He looks like he's 22 the whole movie.
But John Travolta looks vastly different. It's very, very baffling.
Yeah. That said, though, I remarked upon this. This is a, guys, let's be clear. A downright awful movie. Just really the longest hour 40. You think, oh, hour 45. Okay, so if it's bad, it's still like not that long, right? It felt really fucking long, right?
Once it got to like maybe two-thirds through or maybe halfway through, yeah. It really felt like, okay, how long is this movie?
Like long, right? This feels this like is, a long movie. So
this is a trek.
Yeah. But I will say that like a lot of the production level stuff, like I mentioned somewhere, it's like whatever, like all the, a lot of the crew they hired did a bang-up job, you know?
Yeah,
the makeup's pretty good and like the sets all feel really alive. It doesn't feel like a cheap movie or anything, you know? It feels like a real movie.
Like when you watch a movie, like one of those kind of fake looking movies, like some independent movie you've never heard of, you're like, oh, I'll throw this on, I'll see what this is all about, and it feels like an empty set. Like,
yeah,
they film people, like there's no art department, there's just like it feels like a hollow
white thing. Rooms and yeah,
this movie looked really good,
yeah,
but just the writing and the bizarre acting choices really take you out of it. And the soundtrack.
I think to the degree that I have to think comes down to the writing, like I feel like those are musical cues that maybe were written into the script. I don't know that for sure, but somewhere someone was really uncreative with, I'm going to say, about half, if not more, of the soundtrack choices were just like not objectively bad songs at all, but just really
on the nose choices.
Like, right. If you, yeah, I'm trying to think of some.
I pulled it up here.
Thank you. Yeah.
Smoke on the Water.
Smoke on the Water. It's just like to indicate what the era is. It's just like Smoke on the Water. Oh, they're at the disco. They're playing.
It's 1979, so it's Heart of Glass.
They're at the disco. Heart of Glass is playing. I love. It's right out of Scarface. Maybe this was happening rampantly in the 80s. I was a little baby, so I do not know what the club scene was like. But it seems like almost like a trope of like, I love the thing of like gangsters at clubs hating it. You know, they're always like sitting at some booth going, who's that? I don't like him over there. Who's that? Oh, this is, you know. So there's that.
Oh, this doesn't have to do with the soundtrack, but just talking about like, would any mobster actually be voicing these things out loud? At one point, somebody's explaining the five boroughs to John Gotti, who's from New York City.
Not only does he say so, like, yeah, you have to convince the five boroughs. That's a thing. And then he
lists one on each
finger.
Then
he lists them, he counts them off on his finger.
I have no doubt the other families will back you, but only if you have the support of all five boroughs. Queens, Brooklyn, Manhattan, Staten Island, the Bronx.
Now, once again, that is New York, Staten Island, Queens, the Bronx.
Five boroughs, and that makes a fist.
Yeah. And then he says, and that is a metaphor. Do not be confused. Just really on the nose stuff, as they say. a lot of examples, a lot of, like you said, weird choices and stuff. I don't even know. It's tough to not think of other movies along the way, you know? Like, one thing that I thought was funny about this movie was, you know, a movie like this makes you appreciate better movies and stuff, because I realized, like, okay, like, again, just like movies have subplots, so it's weird to just complain that too much is going on in general, but it's just because they make it so confusing, just like this movie. Really pretty early on, tell me if you disagree, started referring to everyone by their first names, and it's like, maybe just because the characters aren't memorable, but like when you're watching Goodfellas, I know it's a tough comparison, right? But like, and you know, and Henry's like, oh, Paulie told me to call Tommy and Jimmy. I'm right there. I know exactly who the fuck you're talking about because these characters are so vivid. And I feel like there was entire scenes in Gotti where it was just like, Neil told Angelo Merry Christmas and John said that wasn't very good. And I was like, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know what you guys are talking about. And I'm trying. I'm right there as a viewer. I'm trying to be into the movie. And it's just like, you know what Neil said, don't you? Neil said that Paul said that John. It's just a lot. Early on, I felt like too early they got me on that.
At one point, I leaned to you and I said, this is nonsense.
And they're talking about who fucking says. And the other thing, it skips around time. And I get that you're trying to encompass a lifetime of crime and court and whatever else. So you have to like pick and choose. But it's so funny. You'd be like, Christmas, 1984. And they have this whole discussion about who fucking says Merry Christmas to who and how appropriate that is. And then that's it. And they move on to 1985. So who's that the whole year?
What did Sammy Grubano say?
Well, he was over at Paul's house just now.
Yeah, it was at Paul's house just now.
Did you see Sammy there?
No, I just stopped by for 2 minutes.
Well, he tells Paul, he says, I want to go see Neil, wish him a Merry Christmas. Why do I give a shit about all this? Paul said, what the hell you want to do that for? You're on our side. And what did Sammy say to that? He said, we're all a family, ain't we? And Neil's the inner boss. Sammy told you that? Sammy told me.
And that was the thing, too. It's like they arbitrarily, so they're jumping around time, but then they don't always tell you what year you're in. Yeah. They'll do the time jump, and then you're just kind of left to your own devices to figure out where the fuck we are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, I guess we're not in the late 90s if John Gotti's not in jail.
Yeah.
But other than that, I'm lost.
True. Yeah, yeah. It was almost tough to keep up with. And maybe it's not the most important thing, but he was like in and out of jail.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't always clear on what was going on with John.
No.
It's like he just maybe just lived that life once in a while. They take you to jail and you're like, all right, I'll go for a few years. And mm-hmm. That was the thing. And then you just do that. All that talk about how he doesn't trust people that didn't do time. It's almost like a rite of passage or something. But yeah, I don't know. Aside from John Travolta, too, I guess some of the guys were okay. You know, it's fun to watch. Well-cast, mafioso supporting type guys and stuff like that. Some of that stuff was all right, but man, they just weren't given very good stuff.
I don't know.
No.
I don't know if they brought a lot to the table.
I'm trying to think. You're right. I think maybe...
And the writing, bad writing is really hard to overcome.
Bad writing, like, yeah, yeah.
If we've learned anything from watching WWE for all these years, is that...
Bad writing.
Yeah, the best performer can't overcome, like, a terrible fucking script.
That's true. I think John Travolta is the best reason to watch the movie. I couldn't say watch the movie because of the guy that played Angelo, but I thought he was all right. But I like when he explained what the five boroughs were. That was great.
Oh, this is kind of... apropos of nothing, but the movie was written by Lem Cobbs and Leo Rossi, who plays Bobby Borriello.
I remember that guy. Yeah, mm-hmm. He was his one of his friends throughout, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Sure.
The guy gets
shot
in front of his child.
Yeah,
yeah.
Spoiler, but based on true story, man. This shit happened years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
Oh, the critical consensus on Rotten Tomato.
Yeah.
Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
Which I thought was funny. Just one word. Forget about it.
Forget about it.
Like, oh.
Succinct. You had a good call after we did it last time. Like, although we probably could have talked about Airheads cold whenever. Stuff like this, it's good to watch the movie and then go right into recording. Because I will forget a lot of this stuff in a few days. Even having had a conversation with you about it afterwards. It's completely. Just that... level of like, again, if it's hard to follow in the first place, and not for a lack of trying, I swear, it was just really whiplashy. If I'm not, like, I remember one example I'll just say real quick is there's like a quick, one of the things, like, they show the kid, like, meeting who's going to be his wife, you meet her, and then an hour later, it's just the wife. It's just like, it's not really storytelling so much, it is just like, yeah, she'll be back, just so you know, you know. But
with that, there are things that they don't circle back on at all.
100%, yeah. And then things that I feel like become a bigger deal are like, there was just like a voiceover, it's like, oh yeah, by the way, suddenly there were these tapes and everyone was on tape. It was a bad thing. And then it becomes a plot point for like the rest of the movie. And it just feels like, I guess, shoehorned in, you know, and like some quick, it's like, oh, there's tapes now. Okay, what's going on with the tapes? I thought it was, yeah.
But it's not like a nonlinear story in the way that like Pulp Fiction can jump around, right, like, but still makes sense, and you get like, oh, that's so creative that they would jump around.
Yeah, and
you know, a litany of other examples of movies that do that same thing. But this was like, I can't decipher why they jumped around the way they did.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, question for you. The little bookended segments, did those feel like ultimately, now that we're done with the movie, you look back at the beginning and at the end of him talking to the camera, does that kind of feel like it's from a different movie?
Absolutely. So the movie opens with John Gotti kind of standing at the Brooklyn Bridge
or whatever, yes.
And he turns to camera and says a little line.
Let me tell you something. New York is the greatest fucking city in the world. My city. I was a kid in these streets. I started in a fucking gutter, and I made it to the top. This life ends one of two ways, dead or in jail. I did both.
And then we don't really see that version, that sassy version of the
character. We never see him be sassy. He never talks to the camera anymore.
Until the very end of the movie, where he says what might be the best line ever written in a film.
Listen to me, and listen to me good. You're never going to see another guy like me if you live to be 5,000.
Then the movie just ends.
Then it just ends.
That's it. That's the whole fucking thing.
Can I say this? I'll cut it if you don't think I should say it, but it's also after he's dead in the movie.
He dies. They cut back to the fucking bridge.
There's a movie bridge John Gotti is eternal, you know?
Yeah,
it's he just is there. Remarking about the city. The city. I tell you what.
I can't believe this movie, they made this movie for $10 million.
Can we talk about some of these things, including who they is when you say they made it?
Yeah.
$10 million?
So this movie has been in development since 2010 and you can kind of tell, like, just that a litany of people were attached to it after, like, because it feels like a movie that's cannibalized.
And it just, like, that story, I'm sure, like, you know, it's begging to be made into some kind of a movie, so that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So is that to say people were attached in the making of it, or the portraying of Gotti, or both?
Both. Various directors and actors attached to it over the years at certain points, including Barry Levinson, who was slated to direct at one point, and Al Pacino. And I learned that Joe Pesci was attached to play Angelo.
Okay. He would have been a really good Angelo.
He ended up suing. He filed a $3 million lawsuit against the filmmakers.
Oh! $3 million?
Yeah. According to The Hollywood Reporter in July 2011, Joe Pesci sued Fiori Films for $3 million and punitive damages for allegedly cutting his role in salary. Pesci claimed he was offered $3 million to play Angelo Ruggiero, and he had gained 30 pounds in preparation for the role.
Oh, wow. Maybe that is ringing some vague bell in my head. And then what? So he's saying he gained 30 pounds, and then they made his part smaller than he was, like, prepared for it to be? Like, I might not have done this?
Basically, in the lawsuit, they claim, I'll read, this is from the lawsuit. Defendant has no intention of paying Pesci $3 million or having him portray Ruggiero in the film. Rather, the plaintiff secretly planned to use Pesci's name and likeness to promote the film and then to later concoct some pretext for terminating the contract so as to avoid paying plaintiff anything for the substantial publicity and buzz that was generated.
Wow. Wow.
The lawsuit was eventually settled in 2013.
I was going to ask, when you said $3 million, the first thing I thought was, is that part of the $10 million budget that this movie had, or how does that go? But maybe the settlement wasn't the full $3 million,
the details aren't publicly available.
That's all pretty crazy. It's like, I know the movie business is like anything else that involves a ton of money. It's filled with corruption and bullshit and everything, but like when there's a mob movie that has all kinds of allegations of shadiness, you can't help but go, huh, right?
Especially when the movie seemed to kind of just be, look at this wonderful guy who did all of these wonderful things.
I mean,
and aren't the government the real criminals if you stop and think about it? That really seems to be like the point of the movie.
Yeah, and it's not a subtle thing. The themes are often just screamed out loud by the John Gotti character.
What's subtext? Kevin, what's subtext, Connolly?
Yeah, that's really I love it's so true that he just kind of screams the themes once in a while. Whatever the scene is getting at, he just it's scream text.
Yeah, absolutely.
I forgot what I was even going to say. That's so funny. oh, I know. Yeah, that it's another thing. Like, okay, of course it's unfair to like take a movie and like, well, Goodfellas do this, but like any almost like Pulp Fiction, successful crime. Drama, you know, fiction, not fictional, but, you know, like movies, non-documentary films, like they show him killing people in cold blood and then are also just like, but also like when he died, they threw a parade in the streets and here's some footage of people going, yeah, he wasn't so bad. But like nothing in the movie really supports endears that. You to him yeah. in that way that makes movies like that. Have that fun duality or whatever. I don't even know if it's fun or so much. It's just like, oh my God, I like this serial killer guy or whatever. You know what I mean? Like it fucks up the whole dynamic of what you, who you're rooting for and stuff. And the whole anti-hero thing. It's like, you know what I mean?
If it's just, there's no, it's not an anti-hero if you're not pulling for him at all.
Right.
We don't really get to know John Gotti, the character. John Travolta doesn't, like that one review I quoted said, like, he does appear to be having a lot of fun.
Like, there is...
but, right. you know, he like, the way he delivers lines, like, the if Tony Soprano said these threatening things, they would sound really, really abrasive and scary. Mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. out of John Travolta's mouth, it just sounds like... It sounds like he's improvising or something.
Yeah, it's really weird. There is an undeniable, like, you know, you could say that John Travolta's not exactly a master thespian, but I think there's a... Again, like he's kind of running circles around people in a lot of scenes, even albeit in a hammy way. But there's one thing, like a small thing, I liked in this movie, a little moment was when their young son, a tragedy befalls him, and they're waiting in the hospital to find out. It's just a quick little shot. I don't know if you remember it, but it's a quick little shot, and he is pacing in the hospital,
mm-hmm.
and it's kind of a cool shot. It's not subtle. Again, Kevin is not subtle, right? The director here, but. It's like, it's kind of split. And so off to the left is like the family sitting there out of focus. And the focus of the shot is him pacing nervously. I'll be like, damn it. That guy's a good fucking actor, man. He's like pacing, man. He looks like he's got a lot in his mind. It's almost like the script guy is like not making him say stupid shit for a minute. And he's just pacing. He's like, damn, John Travolta is really worried right there. And then they start doing dialogue and he kind of, you know, kind of comes down a little. But yeah.
But even then, the acting is overshadowed by the bizarre choice to do like a out of focus shot.
It's
thing.
Like, that's the thing is, I think I like that idea a little bit more than like, it's so out of focus. It's really weird. And the logistics are weird that like the doctor would just be like, hey, you're the first guy I saw. Here's what happened to your kid. Go tell everyone else, I guess. But that said, I just like those little, it was a little bit of a snapshot. Like, oh, that's kind of a nice moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A bit inspired. That's how low the bar was. I'm looking.
Well, apparently the film's original distributor, once it was eventually made, they weren't pumped on the movie because
this you told me about and is hilarious. If it's the thing I think it is, right? Yeah,
Lionsgate was the originally attached to. They were slated to distribute the movie, which was supposed to be released in the U.S. on December 15th, 2017. But just 2 weeks prior, Lionsgate sold the film back to its producers and studio, so it was delayed. So presumably, you think they saw it and then said, no, thank you?
Cut our losses, you know? Like, this won't make this at the theater, but if we sell it back to them, oh my God, because then too, it's like, I don't know what the precedent is for this, if there's anything at all, but it seems like, you know, if I bought a movie, once I own it, and I was now unsure about it, you'd think you might shop it around or something, but it's almost just like, well, these dummies believe in it, let's sell it back to them, you know? Like, I don't know.
I could be wrong, but I don't think that happens.
It seems pretty pretty uncommon. And so, because then it's like, I guess, so weird. So you think you sold your movie, and then you ultimately just didn't.
Well, in April 2018, who comes to the rescue?
Who does?
But MoviePass.
MoviePass. Laugh all you want, but maybe they weren't thriving then. Yeah, it's probably okay to laugh.
No, they were not.
I was trying to think of the time frame. I don't know if they ever thrived, but we saw a lot of free movies. So sure I feel did. Like... I feel like they were fake thriving for a minute or something. I don't know.
And it was so funny learning that MoviePass had a financial stake in April 2018, it was announced that MoviePass Ventures had acquired an equity stake in Gotti. And that made a lot more sense in hindsight because when we had MoviePass,
mm-hmm.
they were advertising the fuck out of that movie.
Yeah.
It was like one of the only movies that you could go see. It's like MoviePass was, yeah. if you're not familiar, for the uninitiated, a couple of years ago, there was this wonderful thing, MoviePass, that you paid a we paid like a crazy low amount for the annual thing. And yeah, the idea was that you could go see as many movies as you want each month.
When I say too good to be true,
it really was. And that's why it's not around anymore.
It was too good to last.
It hemorrhaged money. Yeah. I don't think it made any money.
I think a lot of things that are like these businesses, and it's not shocking to find out they weren't making money, because you're like just suddenly seeing movies. It must have evened out to like we're seeing movies for a few bucks, right?
It was awesome.
But sometimes you hear about these companies where it's like, oh, whether it's Twitter, and it's like, oh, yeah, they don't make any money, you know, or like they're like in the red all the time. It's just like, sometimes that surprises me about a company. Not surprising at all about MoviePass, because I don't know what they thought was going to happen exactly. Did they think it was just...
Maybe they thought everybody was going to eventually get on board, or
I was going to buy more popcorn and we'll just start playing with the popcorn money.
Yeah, I couldn't tell you what the plan was, but I can tell you that that was like a wonderful year. Maybe it was about a year all told.
Feels like about a year, and I feel like at its height, because then, without getting too much into it, we ended up moving into a camper and traveling all over the land, going to a few less movies. And I think that's almost what also lined up with it dying off, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Well, it was a slow death. They didn't immediately go away, but they did like offer really limited selections for movies that you could use MoviePass for. So like I remember at one point it was like, oh, I can go see the Slender Man movie.
I remember that was just 1 week. It was like, well, because at its height, I feel like most movies you can go see.
Yeah, I think it was just about everything.
Was there like a week wait if it was like a big movie or something even? I don't even know.
But I do remember that was a really fun time, because we went and saw a lot. We gave a lot of movies chances that we probably wouldn't have gone to see otherwise. And one movie that we really enjoyed that I don't think I wouldn't have bet any money that I would have liked it was Rampage.
Oh, yeah, Rampage.
The Dwayne Johnson vehicle, Rampage.
A lot of
that
fun.
Movie was so fun, and that was a MoviePass event for us, and I just remember that movie was so funny and really enjoyable and just action and ridiculous.
Big cheesy action, yeah. You know.
At one point, they go see a scientist character, and he says,
"Is it when science shits the bed? I'm the guy they call to change the sheets."
Mm-hmm.
And that was years ago I saw them. I've seen it once, and
yeah,
it's
exactly,
still in
right.
my head.
I won't remember Gotti in a week. That line runs laps around Gotti. Yeah. Yeah, it was true, too, because I guess a fun thing happens where, like, I don't know, maybe is expectations the right word or something? When you go, like, you know, if we went to see Gotti, tell me if you got more about this. We saw that Gotti premiered at the Cannes Film Festival.
Mm-hmm.
So if me and you, let's just say it's highly improbable, you know, like, fuck it. I go on The Price is Right, and I win a trip for two to the Cannes Film Festival. I'm like, oh my God, I never thought we'd be here, but let's just dive in. Let's just go see the best of the best. And oh my God, Wes Anderson has a new movie, blah, blah, blah. There's a fucking John Travolta Gotti movie. We might be like really fucking bummed out if we sat through this movie, right? But to watch it on Peacock on your couch with the dogs, I had a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun. That's all I'm saying.
Not a bad time.
No.
I do wish I could have been a fly on the wall for the Cannes Festival premiere of that movie, because aren't you so curious about how the room felt?
It was so bad it only got a 5-minute standing ovation. It was the most tepid. They barely stood up.
No one asked any questions.
That's right. Yeah, I would. I wonder if there's footage of that on YouTube or something. People awkwardly shuffling out of the Gotti screening.
Oh, I wish. Oh, so yeah, MoviePass.
Sorry.
According to their own internal figures, they accounted for 40% of the tickets sold for Gotti.
Now, this is starting to sound like a total mafioso scheme of where you steal something off a truck and sell it to fucking the company or something, right?
I found an old Deadline report from June 2018, so shortly after it premiered, that there was a mixed feeling over MoviePass's participation. They have one quote they attributed to some unnamed independent movie studio head.
Okay.
It used to be in distribution, we'd all gossip whether a studio was buying tickets to their own movie to boost their opening.
Oh.
But in the case of MoviePass, there's no
secret.
Straight
up.
They're literally buying the tickets to their own movie.
Yeah.
And that's not even the weirdest part about this movie's marketing.
Oh, right. So MoviePass. So what they're saying is because we'd go and get two tickets, the movie theater would just give us two tickets to Rampage, or Upgrade, a film I enjoyed tremendously. We want to see in a movie. And then they were just getting MoviePass to settle up with them? Was that the thing?
Or I thought it was like MoviePass bought up these tickets.
Got it.
So maybe they bought them up and then sold them back to the you and me, you know, the movie pass purchasers.
It's just like when you're aware you're participating in a racket, it's a really unique feeling, right? It's probably like, oh, I got this like stolen car. I'm just driving around in it. It's probably, you know, maybe it's not the same as a stolen car.
Yeah.
But participating in a racket, nonetheless, that was the feeling I had.
Yeah, at the time, it was funny that kind of recognizing, oh yeah, this MoviePass thing that I'm enjoying immensely, this cannot last. Mm-hmm. And it didn't. Of course it didn't. Mm-hmm. Of course it didn't. Mm-hmm. Like, how can they be making, they can't be turning a profit with this. They weren't. They were not. Absolutely
yep.
were not.
Yep. Yep.
So I noticed while doing research on this wonderful piece of art that the Wikipedia page had a Rotten Tomatoes controversy section.
Oh, and, love the Rotten Tomatoes controversy.
So when the movie first came out, the audience score on Rotten Tomatoes was 80%, which was quite a large disparity. There's usually some disparity. Like,
yeah,
critics are usually harsher on a movie than the audience.
And it's just rare that it lines up, I feel like, right?
Very rare.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure there are some instances. I'd be curious to know what the closest one is. Mm-hmm. But so given that the audience score was suspiciously high, mm-hmm. people suspected that the marketing team and the production studio were behind the positive votes.
They were goosing that shit too.
Especially after the Gotti marketing campaign started leaning super hard into the bad reviews. And there's still, as of this recording, it's still up on the Gotti official Twitter account. It says, audiences loved Gotti, but critics don't want you to see it. The question is, why? Trust the people and see for yourself. And they lean into the whole like don't trust trolls behind the keyboard.
It yeah, trolls.
The movie critics don't want you to see.
They said they put out a hit on it.
They put out a hit on our movie.
I wish you would have put out a hit. You know what I'm saying?
Huh?
Oh,
call up John Gotti's producers. Tell him I said that shit about their movie.
And it's funny because that same Deadline article I was just talking about. There's a quote from a guy named Dennis Rice, who they billed as the person who spearheaded the marketing. He says, what's shocking to me is that 80% of audience members on Rotten Tomatoes and 4 out of 5 of them on Fandango liked the film. Clearly, critics are out of touch with the people who actually vote with their pocketbooks. It makes me wonder if the press and critics don't want a movie to succeed because they incorrectly think we are glorifying John Gotti. Yeah, that's it. That's why.
I think when people get like, it's like, I get it. Like, you're so involved with this project, maybe for fucking 10 years or something like that. But it's like, it ain't all that, man. It ain't. No one's going like fighting their urge to write a good review just because they like object to what you've done on a bigger scale. It's like, nah, man, your movie is just like, you're telling me you didn't. I'm not saying it's impossible, like that some people liked it or something. People can like whatever they want, takes all kinds, whatever. But it's like, you're telling me there weren't any test screenings that people like were like, the movie doesn't make sense, man. What the fuck's going on? It's all over the place. It's totally different. You know, yeah.
Also, though, besides, toward the end of the movie, there's like testimonials from what seemed to be real news broadcasts, like talking to people from New York after John Gotti gets sentenced to life in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And they're upset because he does a lot of good for the community and all these things. But besides these testimonials, there is absolutely no glorification. Like,
yeah.
He doesn't even seem to be like having a lot of fun. Doesn't seem to have like,
no.
There's really no glorification there at all. So what the fuck is that guy talking about?
You're right. Because, and also you said this before, when you mentioned the movie that there were things that aren't circled back on, it is like, they do. Do you remember the scene? It's like, they're doing their whole like Satriali's hanging out where the mobster's in town.
Mm-hmm.
They're walking and talking about mobster shit, and then he bumps into a kid and he's like, hey, are you still boxing? And the kid's like, no, the gym shut down. And they have this weird thing about the gym, and it's only less weird if you're like, well, we're gonna see him get the old gym open from his town back up. And even then I get it, where it is like, I kill people, but also like, oh, this kid was gonna be a boxer and now his gym is closed. Like, they didn't explore that. You never hear about it again. So now the movie just stops dead in its tracks. In the sense, literally, the characters stop walking to talk about this gym with this kid, and then they keep walking, and the scene continues. It's
okay, so like, back to the movie.
Yeah, back to the movie.
You just fucking closed down Tully's.
This is an institution. How long has Tully's been around?
I walked past Tully's 40 years. What happened? What the fuck happened?
I don't know.
Rent's going up. They got cited for some code violation or something.
Yeah. Don't you worry. They're back in business. Hey, how's your father? How's his liver?
And there is evidence to suggest that the audience reviews were absolute bullshit.
Oh, meaning like good reviews did exist. However, they were all 40 guys named John from Baltimore all like were like, just best fucking movie I ever seen.
So this is from Paste Magazine. But is it they found that after opening on just 500 screens,
mm-hmm.
And pulling in $1.7 million at the box office,
okay.
Gotti garnered almost 7,000 user reviews.
Okay.
So compared to The Incredibles 2,
mm-hmm.
which is the same opened the same weekend, made 105 times more than Gotti at the box office. And they only had 7,600 reviews.
Okay, so roughly just a handful more. Yeah.
There's no fucking way. Like, this, just that amount of reviews is bonkers, like, compared to how many people saw the movie.
That's a goosing.
So people on, leave it to people on Reddit to figure this out.
Sure.
Somebody says, I went to take a look at the written reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, and out of the first 58 reviewers with an available profile, 45 had created their account in June 2018. Out of these... out of those 45, 32 had only reviewed Gotti.
Jeez.
10 had reviewed Gotti and another movie. And most of those, seven of those, it was, they had reviewed Gotti and the movie American Animals. And
what's that one? Is that
a movie pass? Movie pass had purchased.
Okay.
They had purchased financial stake in one other movie before Gotti. And it was American Animals. it's amazing. It's, I don't know what it, this movie is so fucking bizarre.
Yeah, wow. It's really, it's like a, there's just an ineptitude at hand, even down to like them trying to, I keep using it, and this wasn't my vernacular before we recorded it, but it was in that quote, but they kept fucking goosing it. So it's like, they keep trying to goose shit. You're goosing the numbers, you're goosing the numbers, you're goosing this, you're goosing that. Fuck. Yeah, it's just, it's a lot, and, yeah.
To market against kind of keyboard warriors, but then mm-hmm. to mobilize your own keyboard warriors to make positive reviews. It's
really crazy, right.
And then the only thing that made people sniff out is that they did too many. They made way too many reviews.
That's funny, yeah. Yeah.
And it didn't help at all.
Now you're telling me, what you're telling me is it's, you don't believe people were so moved by this movie that they felt inclined to start accounts?
It's possible. I will mention...
Not to this degree is all, yeah.
I will mention that these days, the audience score sits at 44%. So after a few years, it's even
That's probably a reflection of the, at one time, 80.
Yeah.
And then a few years of the realistically 0 to 10, we're averaging about a 44 there. It's coming down to earth.
And I want
to
point out that we didn't go into this movie with our arms folded and thinking, okay, we're going to hate this.
Nope.
This is going to suck. No, nope. I like to come to movies with an open mind because critics aren't always right. And that's kind of the whole fucking point of this podcast.
We'll give you a fair shake and then some. I want to like it and I'll look for things to like. Because I will say again, production is nice. There's like really cool, there's some good shots mm-hmm. and everything looks really nice. And you know, everything. A lot, you know, there's just like, you know, it like you were saying, it looks like a fucking real production. Mm-hmm. I guessed it had a much higher budget than it's reported, $10 million. And $10 million is nothing to sneeze at. But just as far as movies go,
yeah,
with like a legit, with a kind of a star in there and stuff like that, sometimes it doesn't leave a lot, you know. And mm-hmm. like we were talking, it just feels unfinished or rough around the edges. But they had, you know, costumes and good, like, you know, overhead establishing shots of the city. It all just looked really nice, again, at times. But, Hard to keep up with.
Yeah. Very baffling. Baffling choices all around.
I do wonder, I wouldn't be surprised, I don't really care that much, but I do wonder if there was some longer cut at one point or something that scenes breathed a little more, because sometimes it really was just like, here's exactly as much as you need to know. Oh, we haven't talked about this yet. This movie had it in spades, and I say we haven't talked about this just because it's something we talk about a lot when we watch, you know, bad movies. Bad writing. Just tons of it.
It was rich in bad writing.
Rich in bad writing. A thing we like a lot. One of my favorite bad writing things is when characters talk to each other in a way that characters would never talk to each other. Look, it's tough. You want the audience to know things, and it's tough to maybe always find ways to do that organically. But that's the gig. That's the challenge of good writing. So, you know, I can't tell you how many times I'm on the phone with my brother, and I say things like, look, you're my brother. I said I'm going to be there. I'm going to be there. Or something, right?
I've known you my whole life.
Right. Taylor, we've been married 5 years. How could you say that to me? So just like, it just sticks out to me so bad, like a sore thumb. There's a lot of this. I am your brother. I am your father. Yeah, just, I don't know. Maybe people are talking like that, and our families are weird, and people are just all the time reciting their relationships back to each other. But I remember who my brother is, and I assume he does the same.
Well, we're not Italian.
That's the thing, too. That's not my... I don't know, man. But it is in movies besides just Italian families, you have to admit. We've joked about that for a long time.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm just fucking around. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I did notice that John Travolta's Italian in this movie is...
When he speaks actual Italian, not American Italian accent, right. But like, yeah.
Rough around the edges. Yeah. When he says... There's a scene where he says the phrase La Cosa Nostra a few times. And each time he says it more like... He slurs it a little bit more.
Yeah.
La cosa nostra.
Yeah.
Because we're going to do this thing. We're going to do it right. It's going to be la cosa nostra. La cosa nostra till I die.
You pointed out, too, and look, I'm not going to do much better, but you pointed out, too, that the character Angelo Ruggiero, whatever it is, Travolta himself keeps coming with the different pronunciations, right?
I think he says it maybe a total of 3 times in the movie, and each time it's a little different.
That's the experience with a name like that, though, maybe. Because I don't...
Well,
Ruggiero?
I remembered that name because there's an episode of The Sopranos, I think the season 3 opener is Mr. Ruggiero's neighborhood.
Ruggiero, yeah.
And the FBI agent character, whose name escapes me right now.
Harris?
Agent Harris. Mm-hmm. He says it.
Says, okay. I mean, it sounds, the R-way sounds a little rough.
It's a reference to probably some show I'm not familiar with.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But yeah. We only watch The Sopranos, just in case you're listening at home.
Yeah, if that wasn't evident yet. Sopranos and wrestling, that's it. But one of the, when I was scrolling reviews, one of them mentioned that it's gone through like 44 different directors and producers.
Because you said that Pesci shit said, you said 2011.
Yeah.
And so now it's 2020, obviously, but 2022. But if that movie came out in 18, so that was at
2010
least,
is when it was first announced.
So 2010 to 2018 was the cycle. That's 8 years. That's a lot of things. That's 2 Olympics.
And I'm not sure what happened, but... When Pesci settled his lawsuit, the people attached to the movie were John Travolta, Kelly Preston, mm-hmm. His real life wife, which I didn't know until after.
Who was in the movie, and it was sadly her penultimate role.
Mm-hmm. She passed away in 2020 from breast cancer.
Very sad.
But another actor who was attached to it at the time, who ultimately fell off the project, was Lindsay Lohan.
Whoa.
And I,
man.
Oh, if she would have been the cherry on top.
She would have brought something. Well, was she just been like that little role Kim that the kid married?
I wonder if that
might have made the role bigger.
What if that role was bigger at the time? That's probably what happened. Well,
yeah.
If Pesci's lawsuit is to be believed, they never intended for him to have that role in the first place. But
man, Lindsay Lohan and Joe Pesci in the other timeline, huh?
If only.
But then still Travolta. That sounds like it was. Was he kind of always involved, Travolta? Or
No.
Because he's like Pacino and stuff at the very jump. Yeah, okay.
But he's been attached for a long time.
Yeah. It's interesting, like, John Travolta, he is still making movies, and it's like, so, when I was a kid, I got into Pulp Fiction. Mm-hmm. That was kind of when I first realized John Travolta was a guy, but I was aware of the narrative being a little bit like, he's having a comeback, and it's like, oh, because he was, it's funny, because I remember reading things like, after doing absolute garbage, like, look who's talking now, and as much as I was a kid that liked Pulp Fiction, I was also a kid, and I was like, hey, look who's talking now, it's good, shut up, that one's great. The Talking Dogs one. But yeah, so it seems like, his career, like, he could have, if he had another thing that he got nominated for Oscars and stuff, let's say, next year, mm-hmm. it would be called a comeback because of where he is again in his career. I'm just saying,
sure.
It is what it is, right? Like between Gotti, that movie, The Fanatic, which might come up on this show. Once we do some other things, we might circle back on recent Travolta things and watch the movie that Fred Durst directed him in that is also... widely panned.
Yeah.
But it's just been an interesting ride for John Travolta, right? Because he's talented. There's a good actor in there. But the roller coaster has been up and down a few fucking times for him at this point. I know it's a crazy place out there. I know he's a Scientologist, and that seems to make careers maybe complicated sometimes. I don't know. But I don't know. I know it's been alleged that he's chosen projects poorly. You know? He put a lot of money, I think, into Battlefield Earth, that sci-fi movie that I think I've seen it alleged that sort of torpedoed, like, that Pulp Fiction comeback was, like, after that. Not that any one movie sunk it. I think if you look at his trajectory, because he did big stuff after that, too. But yeah, I don't know.
It seems like his performances and project choices can kind of be all over the map, in a similar way to Nicolas Cage. Although at this point, I would say that he's probably got a way better batting average.
I think you're right.
Thinking about Face Off.
I was just going to say, no better time, because again, much like I think when we were talking about Living in Oblivion on the Airheads episode, we'll never get to do an episode about Face Off.
It got two good reviews.
That's the movie that 105% of critics and audiences all think are great.
And you know what? They're right.
They're right.
If you've not seen Face Off, like, and I know that if you've not seen it at this point, you probably, its reputation precedes it, I would assume. But yeah, it's truly worth watching. It's so entertaining.
If you haven't seen Face Off, I feel like you're holding out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like you heard something or like something.
Forget what you heard unless you heard positive things.
Yeah. But yeah, so with Face Off, it's like, as a kid, I liked it because it's a cool action movie with this wonky premise. We watched it back not too long ago and you realize, fucking doing impressions of each other. The fun of that really was lost on me for when I was like a kid. I guess you sort of get it. Like, I get that he's in his shoes, but man, the degree to which they embody each other show that there's an undeniable talent there. They're just awfully eccentric actors, and I that's great.
And I tend to get a little squeamish about any movie that's more than 2 hours, which, you know, that I got to get over it. But so Face Off's runtime is 2 hours, 13 minutes. It fucking flies. Mm-hmm. It's so I didn't feel like it dragged at all.
It's kind of a lot of things, because like whenever I've come back to watch Face Off and I've not seen it in a few years, it's of course it's the movie where they cut faces off. But I'm also watching, oh, it's also the crazy magnet prison movie.
Yeah.
Where they're, you know what I mean? There's just like a lot in there. A lot happens.
Fuck, I just want to watch Face Off.
Yeah, we'll watch Face Off later.
Perfect.
Oh, but with that too, John Travolta, Face Off is a few years after Pulp Fiction. Sorry to keep talking about that. He made some fucking crazy movies in between. Well, one comes to mind in particular, but so after Pulp Fiction, I don't know the order exactly, but Get Shorty was a great movie, very wise follow-up. Elmore Leonard, gangster shit, really cool. And then a few other ones, but if you don't know the movie, I would just like you to read the plot just to get your reaction to a movie called White Man's Burden. Have you heard of this?
No.
Check out White Man's Burden. Tell me what you think of this. It seems like a dream I had, but I think it's a real movie.
Oh, no.
1995. It's. Go ahead and read that plot.
In an alternative America where African Americans and white Americans have reversed cultural roles, a white factory worker kidnaps a black factory owner for dismissing him over perceived disdain. The tagline says, "In a world of right and wrong, justice is seldom black or white." No. Oh my God.
So it seems.
What the fuck is this?
I guess the optimistic read on it would be, if we're saying to flip black and white would be fucked up for white people, then maybe we're making a valid point about what it's like for black people. But what you did was like, John Travolta's like, I want to play the victim of racism. Can we make me the victim of racism? And I'll kidnap my black boss, played by Harry Belafonte, and we will sort out this made up racial mess we all are in. I'm sorry.
I'm scandalized.
So maybe that's it, man. Maybe you're riding high. As again, this is a year after Pulp Fiction. I'm sure he had stacks of movies. He could have been playing fucking Superman or something. I don't know. But, you know, like,
I would love to know what was off. Like, what scripts were sent to John Travolta when he accepted this movie?
White Man's Burden.
White Man's Burden. There's no way this got good reviews. Let me look it up.
Maybe it's like, you know, maybe it's an underground sensation about, you know, maybe its metaphors hit. Maybe it's aged well, although it feels kind of fucking wonky. And it's just kind of an obscure movie, too, right? Like, for good reasons. This is like what would happen, though. I was young, I'd get into an actor, you know, and you just watch whatever they make.
Yeah.
Obsessively. I just rent it at the video store or whatever, but.
The critic's consensus describes it. It's a well-intentioned misfire.
Okay, that's a good way to say it. A well-intentioned misfire, let's say.
This is actually a pretty close, we were just talking about the disparity typically that exists between audience and critics.
Yeah.
So on Rotten Tomatoes, White Man's Burden has a 24% from critics and a 36% from the audience.
That's great. Yeah. I would be too scared to do a whole episode on this.
I can't watch this.
So, yeah, well, this is all, sorry about the White Man's Burden sidebar, but this will be all we cover it. Too scared to talk about that movie and just dive into it. I don't know.
I would have to imagine that you can't find it anywhere. What are the odds?
Yeah, I don't know. It is interesting how it's not like literally lost to time. Maybe you can get on Amazon and find a fucking VHS or so. I don't know how anything works, but if you're not available widely, it's like you're semi-lost right now, you know, the way that movies used to just be. Like, it didn't used to be... It used to be pretty wide open. You go to the video store, and if it was a big video store, there'd a lot of movies, and that was sort of what affected it. And now it's all just like... I'm sure there's reasons for it, but to us it feels arbitrary. What's where? And all of that.
If you've got a large collection of DVDs or VHS tapes that you're fixing to get rid of, my advice is don't do that. Like, unless if you have the space to keep stuff, because you don't realize what's rare until you get rid of it and you want to watch fucking Bedazzled again.
Yeah.
And you can't find a copy for less than $58.
Where's Bedazzled? That said, I don't know if you're listening to this. Thank you, as always. This movie is on Peacock at the moment. Of course, that's subject to change.
As always.
But, you know, if you're curious, it's on Peacock. Let her rip.
Oh, so last time we discussed, is this movie worth watching?
Yeah.
What would you say about...
Oh, my God.
About Roddy? It might be worth looking at, like, some clips on YouTube.
Yeah, exactly.
Just so you can get a sense for the bizarre dialogue choices.
Right. I'm going to say, honestly, probably no. However, if you are like us in the bag for a movie like this, it's maybe a little hammy. It's set in a criminal a world. You know what I mean? Like, if these things check your boxes, take a look at it. If you have access, if it's on your streaming service or something, I wouldn't say make it a great big deal. So it's kind of a no with an asterisk. Like, you know what I mean?
I wouldn't say avoid at all costs.
Yeah.
Avert your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, this isn't... It's not a good movie.
Yeah.
And it does drag by the end.
And one thing I want to say is that, and I brought it up a few times, but it's kind of impossible not to sometimes think of some better films throughout it. And if you don't believe me, listen to this clip.
Oh, jeez, everybody was there. I mean, there was good fellas. There was non-good fellas.
Oh, that's right. Bad fellas.
When she said bad fellas, there were good fellas and there were bad fellas.
I knew we were in for a treat. Well, it was with the first scene when John Travolta turns to camera and talks to us.
Yep.
But then maybe it's the second scene of the movie when we first see old John Gotti.
Yeah, in prison, visiting with his adult son. Yeah.
And he's talking about his cancer treatment. And he says, they took my tit and put it on my face. I'm like, what the fuck is this? You have my attention. I will watch this movie.
They took my tit and they put it on my face.
The makeup is stellar, too. He looks like a man who's had, like, some work done, an older man, the makeup, you know, and then stuff. And
then they used all of it on him, apparently, because nobody else gets it. And it's
funny. He hogged the whole trailer, yeah.
Seeing when we're back in the 80s or late 70s, people aren't dressed any differently. They made a period piece without any costumes or new sets.
Just put on a Blondie song. They'll know when it is. And then put on fucking... Oh, at one point... This is the other thing, too, is, you know, there's an artistic merit to what songs... We love it, right? Like, when a cool song, everyone loves it. A cool soundtrack choice to a cool... It really just takes a movie to that, like, memorable, like, iconic, whatever moment level. Mm-hmm. And so with that, you can forget... Like, I don't need the lyrics to be exactly describing what's on the screen. Because, again, there's liberties there. There's more. But it's about more than that. I did think Walk Like an Egyptian was a strange choice for the mob montage. I'm just going to say that. I think there's a line you cross with Walk Like an Egyptian when, again, it's just 1987 or whenever the
and
fuck,
that's
right?
That's the only point. It did feel like at some points, though, that this is just like, you know, it's like I wrote down two thoughts early into the movie. One was, this feels like a movie written by Christopher Moltisanti.
A plus observation.
Another one was, this movie feels like it was written by a computer owned by AJ Soprano.
Yeah.
The same joke twice.
You better have all those programs on there.
But at one point, they feature the Animals version of The House of the Rising Sun.
That was the other one.
And it really felt like, oh, did you guys just like watch Casino and, you know, watch every other mob property?
Because, you can use House of the Rising Sun in a movie that's not set in New Orleans. I'm not saying that. But, like, it's during these, like, very, very New York City shots. The streets of New York City. And you know what I mean? And it just, like, and then you have this song about New Orleans. It really just felt like a weird choice. Again, I don't need that to only be in movies about New Orleans. It just was just, like, they feature the lyrics. No one's talking over it. You hear a New Orleans. Oh, I thought this was about how much New York City is going to mourn Jonathan Gotti.
Just some weird, just man. Some very odd choices at every turn a bizarre choice was made.
Yeah, absolutely. We might drop them in here throughout too, but there's definitely some lines. I don't know if there's anything. I forget what it was. I'll find it maybe, but he like tells a joke and explains why it's funny. What was that? I don't even know.
Oh, he says at one point that he's in.
I wouldn't fuck her with my dick.
I wouldn't fuck her with your dick.
Yeah, he's laughing because I wouldn't fuck her with your dick.
And it really just feels like, was this written down?
Was this written? You guys know the cameras are rolling?
Did you ever see it? Whatever country she's from, they probably made her leave. I wouldn't fuck her with your dick.
Well, listen, Paul's got diabetes. What are you going to do? It's not a subject I feel comfortable discussing. What the fuck is so fucking funny?
Sorry.
It's hysterical. We're going to get in the fucking accident.
He's laughing because I wouldn't fuck her with this dick.
It's very bizarre. Yeah. And that's maybe just because we watch a lot of movies. So I guess when you're expecting like the beats of a movie and something subverts that in such a bizarre way,
yeah,
that maybe that would be worth watching in that sense. Just like, look at how weird people can make movies.
They took my tit.
They took my tit, put it on my face.
Yeah, I just, sorry, we're probably winding down, but I'm glad you brought up the beginning again, because like you said, like, it's not the beginning. It's like the most, it's gorgeous, but it's like, because it's the most generic shot of New York City, you know, right? Like street level Brooklyn Bridge out in the city. Gorgeous. Seen it 100 times. Comes out, walks into frame, looks at the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, it's fun. It's like a Ferris Bueller, John Gotti. Hey, listen to me. This fucking city is the best fucking city, whatever he says. And I was like, okay, like, it's not great dialogue, right?
Right.
But it's like, if you decide to take the ride that this movie is sort of implying right here,
mm-hmm.
I was ready to go.
Me too.
Especially at the end, he's like, because you either, you know, there's two endings to this life. You either die or in jail. I did them both or something. It's like, okay, it's halfway. Like, all right. And then it's a little boom and it hits some hip hop song and the fucking credits. And it's like, I'm a little bit interested. But again, then the next scene, it's like, it's not that movie. Instantly, it's not that movie. Instantly, it's old over. It's old guy. Not really. It took my
several scenes in a row early on, I just turned and looked at Mark like, am I having a stroke?
Yeah, that's what I meant, where it felt like parts were like missing or snipped out, beginnings and ends of scenes, where like it really makes me appreciate good movies of like, oh yeah, sometimes movies have one plot and they cut to some whole other thing and it's not weird. It's weird when this movie does it, but like movies just do that. I don't know. I guess they justify it. It was just like they didn't, nothing really leaves much of an impression. Like, no. I said, everything just is happening because in this case, you're probably just following the real story. And it's like, and then he met the woman, Kim, and then they got married. And that's just very much how this movie feels. Like you're just reading a Wikipedia page of things that happened, you know, and then he went in jail.
But you're reading a Wikipedia page as told to you by somebody that like is telling it to you from memory. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, oh yeah, but then this other thing happened. It's like us on this podcast.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Jumping around.
If someone were to make the movie Gotti, it was based on this episode of the podcast, and you got John Travolta to play John Gotti, and then you got all of your buddies to play the rest, and you got $10 million, half bunch of Travolta, a quarter to makeup, a quarter to sets, you probably make a good, you know, comparison to Gotti.
Yeah, I think so.
You're probably about the same. Well, is there anything else we should really cover? I think we talked about Gotti and whether or not we recommend it and whether or not we'll see another guy like him if we live to be 5,000. And that's all I have.
I really enjoyed Cleaver 2.
Cleaver 2. I love this town. Leonard.
Thank you for going on this cinematic adventure with us. Thank you for making it this far, if you're listening. Thank you for joining us on episode 2.
Episode 2.
And we look forward to continuing to trek through the trenches of bad movies.
But not all bad.
Allegedly bad.
I think we'll see what happens. But we're gonna like a lot of these. We're picking a lot of ones we're in the bag for, I think, right?
I hope you like the next one.
Yeah. One for us, maybe. We're just calling the episodes whatever the movie is, but if we were calling them funny things, would we call this one like, oh my Gotti or something? No, we shouldn't.
Sure.
We would, Gothics.
We talked about this in the last episode, but just like how annoying it is when critics try to be funny.
Yeah.
One of the reviews I skimmed said, Gotti awful.
Gotti awful. That's a stretch.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that's Gotti awful. Yeah. You Gotti. Go.
Okay.
Folks.
Okay. catch you next time.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Tell this cocksucker that if he ever deals another card in Queens or ever even whispers my name again, I, me, John Gotti, will sever his motherfucking head off.